The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
In this episode, we're going to be talking about undercover actors in the shadow self. Now, we're following up our pro wrestling episode, the Keeping Kayfabe, which published just prior to this one. And in that episode, we talk a lot about this, about the idea of layering reality with fiction, particularly as it involves institutions and sports and performance products that are given to an audience, layering it with fiction to improve upon it and change it. And we touched a little bit about what happens when you put these layers of fiction upon yourself. We talked to pro wrestler Colt Cabana, quizzed him a little bit about what it's like when he has to play a villain in the ring, and then when he leaves the ring, how he's able to shut that off, but how he still feels like there is a certain amount of him that is that escapes into this villainous character, and likewise, there's an aspect of him in the really goody, well, not really goody two shoes, but the good guy version of himself that he also portrays. So in this episode, we're going to continue this sort of exploration, but we're going to be looking beyond the world of pro wrestlers and looking into the world of actors, method acting, for instance. We're going to look at undercover cops, and we're also going to look at our online selves a little bit.
And before we do so, just wanted to let you know a little bit about kayfabing in case you didn't hear the other episode. Mm-hmm. Kayfabe is a term that's an old carny term that is used to indicate that someone should keep being fake. In other words, if you are wrestling and you're it's a fake wrestling match, you want to make sure you don't break out of character, so you want to kayfabe, right? And we talked in that other episode about how kayfabing really pervades the fabric of our culture. And this is something that has come up, I believe, with Colt Cabana. It has come up in Eric Weinstein's article about kayfabing that you can find it everywhere. You can find it in reality shows, mm-hmm. because a lot of these reality shows, as we know, are scripted, and yet the audience doesn't seem to care, much like in pro wrestling, right? They don't care that there is kayfabing going on. It's about the spectacle.
Yeah. And but then it can also end up sort of warping the individual, or seeming to, because we asked Colt about this, and he said that, yeah, there are times where a particular wrestler lets their gimmick, lets their fictional self kind of alter their their real self. Like they'll buy into the gimmick too much. They'll believe the hype about the character they portray. And on some level, it becomes confused with who they are.
Yeah, that's right. Eric Weinstein, in his essay, alluded to that and said that sometimes they believe these confabulations of their storylines so much so, like, for instance, some sort of infidelity or adultery, that mm-hmm. they will actually then go on to commit adultery, some of these pro wrestlers and some of these various storylines that they've had to play out. So we start thinking about that, and of course we look at ourselves and start to wonder, okay, well, what about our own minds and our own consciousness and sense of self? Because when we get up in the morning, we basically have to put on our public selves, right, when we go out the door. And what is this story that we're telling ourselves? What is this script that we're following for ourselves?
Yeah, and ultimately, who is that guy? Who is that girl that you are in these various environments? Like, who's that person that you are on the subway train versus that person that you are in the office versus that person that you are, tucked into bed with your significant other or, you know, talking to the cat in the middle of the night? I don't know. It's like every different environment, every different interaction with the external world, it tends to summon a different you.
Yeah, and although we tend to think that we've got this continuity director in our head making sure that we're always the same person we purport ourselves to be, there are opportunities for us to break from the script.
Right.
And that's what we're going to look at a little bit today. And when you start thinking about scripts, of course, you have to look at actors.
Yes. Now, yeah, when you start thinking about actors, and certainly that comes up, you know, we're talking about like pro wrestlers who are, you know, in an angle where they have to pretend they're having an affair and then they end up having the affair. You can think of various examples of actors that end up meeting on a set where they're playing significant others and then they end up being significant others to a certain extent, you know. And certainly I even remember I was in a community play adaptation of 1776. I was Thomas Jefferson, and I ended up dating Mrs. Jefferson after the play.
So you feel like the groundwork was put there, and that it was just like that whole debate about whether or not you have any free will. It was like the suggestion was there, and you followed it.
Maybe, I don't know. It's possible, but certainly you see this at times. You see people that and you hear stories about actors really getting into their roles, particularly as far as method acting is concerned. So method acting generally combines the actor's consideration of the character's psychological motives and personal identification. Like trying to get their mind inside that of the character they're portraying. Like they're asking themselves, who is this person, and then what do I need to do to connect with them? Like mm-hmm. how can I connect my own feelings with the feelings of this character, and therefore create a more believable presentation on the screen. This versus a more traditional, like non-method approach, where one just simply gets up there and recites the lines and does so in a way that that mimics legitimate, deep felt emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are stories, plenty of stories about actors who supposedly like don't break character. For an entire week of filming, even though they're only filming like during the day, like they're staying in character outside of the picture, and those stories are like people get a little antsy about that,
mm-hmm.
particularly people who really follow the method, and they'll say, well, that's not really what method acting is all about. That's not what was actually originally part of the method as it was conceived.
Right.
And then you also have some stories that just simply didn't happen. Like one of the famous ones is supposedly, and again, this never happened, but Sir Laurence Olivier and Dustin Hoffman were on the set of Marathon Man, and Dustin Hoffman shows up just looking like hell, just dirty and just strung out looking, because his character is supposed to be. And he explains that in preparation for the scene, he stayed up all night and he didn't bathe and all this. And Olivier supposedly responded by saying, "My good sir, why don't you just try acting? Ha ha ha." And it's supposed to, supposed to be a good laugh at the method actor's expense, saying, "Well, why don't you just pretend to be the thing that you are instead of trying to embody it?" But
what I like about that is it's kayfabing the kayfabe.
Yeah.
You know, because here's this fake story about this, about faking reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really interesting. What I like about actors is I think they're very interesting creatures because they are dealing with this duality of nature, yeah. right? And they are having to inhabit this space and try to do so in a way that really fools us, right? Actor Tandy Newton has a great TED.com talk, and she talks about what it's like to be an actor and what it's like to inhabit another character. And she has some interesting thoughts on it, and I just wanted to share some quotes with you. She talks about this idea that she always felt separate from other people. She always felt like the other, mm-hmm. Particularly because she was someone of color in England growing up and right away, and a female. And so here she is already the other. So she talked about this idea of oneness and separateness. She said, our little portion of oneness is given a name, is told all kinds of things about itself. And these details, opinions, and ideas become facts, which go towards building ourselves, our identity. So she's talking about this idea of self and this little bit of self we can grab in the world and define ourselves by. And she says, and that self becomes the vehicle for navigating our social world. But the self is a projection based on other people's projections. Is it who we really are or who we really want to be or should be? So she says that this whole interaction with self and identity was really difficult for her growing up. So she said that when she found acting, it was revelatory. She said, I can hardly find the words to describe the peace I felt when I was acting. My dysfunctional self could actually plug into another self, not my own, and it felt so good. Because she says that while she had a degree from Cambridge, a thriving career, she herself was a bit of a car wreck. Because she was so invested in this idea of self, and she hadn't quite yet figured out that it is just a projection, it's an illusion. And she says that this idea of self is something that we value above all else. And we've created an entire value system and a physical reality to support the worth of self.
Yeah, it reminds me of a study that we ran across, and this is from Ellie A. Conage from the University of Amsterdam. She was curious how much actors are aware of their performance when they perform it, and how and to what extent they're letting a character take over. Because we've heard that before. We heard a little bit of that from Colt Cabana, about, you know, you're playing this character and you just your juices get flowing and you embody it. The character kind of possesses you, right? So this study was interested in that. So she asked Dutch actors to rate their own emotions and the emotions of the characters they were playing across a range of different states, from disgust to anxiety, you know, tenderness, pleasure, fear, etc. And she found that positive emotions were often felt by the actors as they played those characters' emotions, but the more negative the emotion that they were supposed to portray, the less likely it was that the actor would report actually feeling that emotion. So in this study, they found that actors were better able to connect and be taken over by those positive feelings.
Huh. Okay. So they were able then to manage that system of not being influenced
right.
so much by their emotions or the emotions of the character. See, this is why I think it's such an interesting mind game, this acting, because you get into some very weird territory about who you are and what reality is.
Yeah, and we've discussed before, too, like we're talking about chest opening exercises. We talked about laughter and smiling and laughter yoga and all this. And it, you know, comes down to that kind of that fake it till you make it kind of vibe. The idea that just on a physical level, if we, you know, we smile and it makes us begin to feel the emotions that would have made the smile. When we put the effect out there, it generates the cause, even if there was no cause.
And so what Tandy Newton is saying is that when you think about this self and you think, oh, okay, well, I'm happy today. And if you are so malleable that you allow all these different forces to act upon you, then what you're doing is you're confusing self for actual living. Because what she says is that it's the self is not an actual living thing. It's projection, which our clever brains create in order to cheat ourselves from the reality of death. So she's saying that it's our ability to divorce ourselves from the concept of self and then ground ourselves in others and outside experiences that really liberates us and allows us to live fully. So I liked what she had to say about this from an actor's perspective, because there is a ton of duality going on here. So what do you mistake for the real thing, and what is the real thing, I think, is what we're trying to get at here, and underscore.
You get into questions of what is there a real thing? Is there anything at the heart of this, or is it just a bunch of masks encircling the formless? And then to what extent if there is a true you, then to what extent is the fake you almost as powerful? There's a really great episode, I think a shorty of Radio Lab that aired recently called "What's Up, Doc." I recommend you guys checking it out, and I know a lot of you are Radio Lab fans anyway. But it concerned Mel Blanc, of course, the classic voice actor who did the voice of Bugs Bunny and countless others, and
1,500 other voices.
1,500, yeah. And in the end, they talk to his son in this episode, and he talks about like when he played these characters. It wasn't just like, all right, I'm going to do wacky voice number one and wacky voice number two. I mean, there was a sort of method acting mentality there, mm-hmm. where he knew these characters, he would embody them, and even though he's just doing the audio, he would act out. You know, you'd see physically he was different when he was doing one voice versus the other. And so in this episode, they talk about how at one point he was in this horrible crash, car crash on Dead Man's Curve in Hollywood Boulevard, and he nearly died. And he was out for 2 weeks in a coma. And
he would not respond to anyone.
Yeah, not respond to anyone.
Yeah.
But then how do they get him to respond? That's the crazy part.
Well, this is the crazy part. His neurosurgeon, Dr. Conway, he said, out of nowhere, he just decided to call him Bugs Bunny. He called Mel Blanc, one of his characters, Bugs Bunny, and said something like, "Hey, Bugs, how are you doing today?" And then Mel Blanc actually responded as Bugs Bunny and went, "What's up, Doc?" And in character, right? He responds he comes out of his coma basically inhabiting this character.
Yeah.
And he goes through a couple of other voices, I think including Porky, Daffy, and Foghorn Leghorn, until he himself, Mel Blanc, the person, the self that we all think of, is sitting there saying, "What's going on? Where am I?"
Yeah.
So to me, it points to this amazing moment where you do have this question of like, well, how much of Mel Blanc is the characters and how much of those characters is Mel Blanc, you know?
Yeah.
To what degree is he himself or this fictionalized character that he's inhabited?
Now, this leads us into another area, as we discussed earlier, undercover cops, undercover agents, vice operatives. And in the interview with Colt Cabana, we asked him briefly about, what it's like when he's out there and he's portraying a bad guy. He has this character, the officer Colt Cabana, who's a vile, foul-mouthed policeman, and then he has to go back. You know, he has to leave the ring, go into the backstage area, and he says he's able to shut it off. Like it doesn't bleed over into his life after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that brings to mind again these vice officers, police officers who have to go out and pretend to be drug dealers, pretend to be what have you, some sort of criminal element. In order to infiltrate it and actually get the actual criminals and get them arrested. So what happens when they're doing that? What happens when they have to play that part? And then is there the chance that the criminal element they're pretending to be becomes the real them? Do they end up, essentially they're pretending to be this monster, and then the monster consumes them? And it does happen.
Yeah, I mean, this is a high wire act, right?
Yeah.
And you have a bit about how there have been some instances, right, where that shadow self has taken over.
Yeah, yeah. And this is, of course, this is important stuff. This is stuff that's been studied, because ultimately you're talking about law enforcement, which is important. You're talking about individuals risking their lives and ultimately their sanity to engage in these kind of operations. So Dr. Michael Girado, a professor of psychology at the University of Ottawa, he conducted a 10-year study of undercover agents. And he looked at 72 undercover cops. And out of these 72, there were six that ended up being disciplined for acting inappropriately during their missions. So one For one person, it was using cocaine. For another, it was conspiracy to sell classified information about ongoing investigations. For one, it was actually selling classified information. For another, it was sexual involvement with a confidential informant. For another, it was excessive use of force. And for another, it was theft of money from an evidence locker. And you see the varying degrees of shadiness in these. And you can imagine, like, all right, you know, like on the cocaine, you can imagine like a guy who's posing as a drug dealer being put in a position where he has to use the drug, or someone says, hey, use that drug, but you know, encouraging them to sample it to prove their worth. You kind of see that as a trope in various undercover cop movies anyway. But then other stuff like stealing money from an evidence locker, like that's more of, I have come back from the role I'm pretending to be, and now I'm actually that in the evidence locker. I'm that at the base, at the home, where I'm supposed to leave this criminal fake me behind. So his ultimate finding, Dr. Garrido's finding, was that undercover agents with a disciplined self-image and control of their impulses almost unwaveringly saw themselves as merely playing the part of a drug dealer. So like Colt Cabana or any number of actors out there, they were able to say, all right, no, I'm back home now. And at home, I'm the real me. I am this version of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that other thing, the drug dealer that I was just pretending to be for like 6 hours, that's just a show. That's just a fake. So ultimately, he says that what you need is an internal set of social standards that prevent you from losing your sense of identity.
Yeah, it makes me think back to our episode on willpower and self-control. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if living a double life creates a heavy cognitive load. We talked about this cognitive load, and that if you have to remember, you know, say two or more items as opposed to 10 items, and then have to take some sort of test in self-control afterward, you're going to be less likely to follow through with self-control if you have a high cognitive load. So in other words, if you're a double agent or you have a double life, then you have to keep in mind this entire other story, which might erode some of that self-control and lead to some of this ego depletion that we've talked about before too, that you just have a finite amount of mental energy to dedicate to certain tasks. So I can see how the shadow self could kind of take over very easily in that instance. I wanted to mention too that psychologist Dr. Alan Salarian has talked about what it's like to work with secret agents. He says, the most secret agents I have met have two signature traits, fearlessness and a high tolerance for anxiety. Whether because of biological factors such as an elevated level of the mood-enhancing neurochemical serotonin, or because of the influences of their early lives, these people seem to be extreme risk-takers who can tolerate and manage worry, tension, and stress with natural ease. So you have to wonder, though, what point are the stakes so high that the tension begins to erode mm-hmm. some of that self-control?
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to discuss fiction. We're going to discuss avatars. And when I say avatars, not only are we going to talk a little bit about your online avatar, but also the older concept of the avatar itself.
And not the movie.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
All right, we're back, and we're going to talk a little bit about avatars here, about the online self, because this is a, you know, we've discussed already this idea that we assume different personas to varying conscious degrees whenever we're interacting with the outside world. There's a slightly different you when you're talking to your mother, and there's a slightly different you when you're talking to the grocer. You know, there's just all these different masks swirling around the ephemeral self, and we just put on those different masks to interact with the world.
But here's this avatar, this opportunity to build a new you from the ground up.
Right.
And what they found, though, what some researchers have found, is that it isn't always too far from the real you, the flesh and blood you. This is very interesting. It's from an article called Is It a Game? Evidence for Social Influence in the Virtual World. It was published in the journal Social Influence. And in the study, which was conducted by Paul W. Eastwick and Wendy L. Gardner, one avatar tried to influence another to fulfill a request. Because what we're talking about here is relationships.
They were using something called There.com for this, which is kind of like Second Life.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of limitless virtual environment where people create little versions of themselves, and then they kind of teleport around and interact with each other.
And, you know, a lot of the fun is just sort of outfitting your character, you know, giving it certain physical characteristics, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like I said, it really is about communication because you're just mirroring what you're already doing in society, or at least this is what this paper is saying. You've got one avatar trying to influence another to fulfill a request, just like in life, right? I ask something of you, you ask something of me,
mm-hmm.
we try to cooperate together to get something done. The experimenter, in this case an avatar, first makes an unreasonably large request to which the responder is expected to say no, followed by a more moderate request.
Yeah, I think it was something like, go to get like 20 screenshots from a particular environment in this this world. So it's like if you were like playing one of these like quest games like Skyrim, and you just it was like a ridiculously complex mission for some seemingly low payoff.
So, as expected, the avatars, which is similar to people who participated in the same experiment in the real world, were more likely to comply with the moderate request when it was preceded by the large request than when the moderate request was presented alone. Now, that's kind of a tactic that I think a lot of people use. Like, if I just go in for the – it's sort of like if you ask for a raise. If I ask for $1 million, then it's a lot easier to get to the maybe X amount that I want as opposed to if I just ask for a $1,000 raise. So what you see is that they exhibited a psychological tendency to reciprocate the requester's concession, the change from a relatively unreasonable request to a more moderate request. So one of the other more striking findings was the effect of what they call the DITF technique, which was door in the face. This is the way that they made the request, was significantly reduced when the requesting avatar was dark-toned. The white avatars in the DITF experiment received about a 20% increase in compliance with the moderate request. The increase for the dark-toned avatars was 8%.
Yeah, and again, this is a virtual world, so there's no telling on the other side of a virtual character if they are black, if they are white, if they are male, or if they are female. I mean, in Second Life, you see people going around as, like, you know, monkeys and cats and dogs and stuff. And, you know, and there are various other examples of people playing, you know, very inhuman characters. So on some level, we know that the person on the other side can be anything. But we still end up buying into the vision that is presented to us.
Yeah, we're still tethered to some degree to our prejudices and the social construction in our mind of what we think the world is. So I thought that was interesting that still what it boils down to is that even though you've created this avatar and it's supposed to represent this duality within yourself, you're still socializing and cooperating or not cooperating in the same sense that you would in your real life.
Yeah. And, of course, another thing to keep in mind with all this is that in these video game interactions, you're, of course, not making eye contact. Now, I like to think of a future time when our video game characters will have our actual eyes. I think that could be
I think that would be really cool.
Yeah. But for now, most characters in video games have just the dead, soulless eyes of the Uncanny Valley. But one of the studies we were looking at, and this was – where was this from?
This was from the University of Haifa in Israel.
Yeah. So they asked 71 pairs of college students who did not know one another to debate an issue over instant messenger and try to come up with an agreeable solution. And they did a couple of facets of this, but the ultimate finding was that when their eyes were hidden, the participants were twice as likely to be hostile because they had and some of the subjects were using like a Skype webcam technology so that they could make eye contact during these interactions and others not, and so when their eyes are hidden, hostility is more likely to occur.
Which is again, you know, you're outside of the social contract, right? Because the way that you know that you're in a social contract is by witnessing the other person's reaction to you, all the nonverbal gesturing that gives you an indication of how they're feeling. So if you can't see that, then it makes sense that you would miss those cues or that they just wouldn't be present enough to sort of get you to line up with acceptable behavior. So this, of course, is one of the reasons why we see rude behavior running rampant online.
Yeah, that's why you see like these just outrageous examples of trolls, you know, where someone's just out there just being completely awful. And, you know, whenever they're eventually exposed, they're not eventually exposed, but in the cases where they're exposed, you see, oh, well, this actually seems like a fairly normal person. How are they that awful online? And, you know, it's because they're on some level, they don't see themselves as interacting with real people. They're just kind of interacting with automatons.
So I think it'll be interesting to see if the shadow self, this sense of shadow self becomes more acceptable as we continue to communicate online, and that this duality maybe disappears a bit, because again we think of ourselves as this continuity, right? This script director in our brain saying you are this, you're a good person, you have integrity, you move throughout the day in the following ways, but then we act another way when nobody is looking. So how much of that will, you know, in the future be acceptable or not acceptable?
Yeah. Finally, the world of fiction, which we've talked about this before, the power of storytelling, the power of fiction. But there was a little study that we ran across that ties in nicely with what we're talking about here. And this is from Brigham Young University, a research team led by Sarah M. Coney, and she writes in this instance for the British Journal of Social Psychology. And she was looking at how exposure to aggressive behavior in literature has a psychological impact on readers. So in this case, they had the test subjects read two different versions of a story. Like, mm-hmm. some people would read a story where the outcome is that the conflict is solved with violence, and in the other, the conflict is not solved with violence. And in both cases, they found that provoked people who were given the opportunity to engage in a specific form of retaliatory violence were more likely to do so if they had just read a fictional account of similar activity. So in other words, the individuals who just read this thing where someone solves a problem with violence, if they then encounter a real life conflict, mm-hmm. they're more likely to be aggressive in that incident.
Which I hadn't stumbled upon that study until we started doing research on this, because we've done mm-hmm. we've covered this subject quite a bit in the ability of the reader to take on the persona of the character and also mirror neurons firing at the same time that a character is throwing a ball in a book, right?
Yeah.
But to see this concrete manifestation of the abstract of aggression mm-hmm. is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And then I think that it points to this idea that this, again, that self is a very tenuous thing.
Yeah.
That this consciousness, this continuity factory that we try to have in our head to churning out this idea of who we are isn't quite as solid as we think it is.
Yeah, and then we had this other study we looked at, researchers from Ohio State University, and they mm-hmm. conducted like six different experiments on about 500 different participants. And they found that stories written in the first person can temporarily transform the way readers view the world, themselves, and other social groups. So, for instance, they were particularly interested at one point in what would happen when individuals were reading about a character and then that character was then revealed to be homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular experiment, they had like 70 heterosexual males, and they read this story, and they found that it, depending on where in the narrative the revelation was made, it had a big impact on how they felt about the protagonist being gay, and also how they just envisioned that character. Like, if it was revealed early in the story, then they brought in a lot of baggage and a lot of preconceptions about uh-huh. what a gay character should be. But if they revealed it later, then all of that stuff wasn't necessarily thrown into the mix.
Because they had a chance to try to occupy that person's
to walk
mindset.
In their shoes. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Huh. Very cool stuff.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Yeah, it really makes you think about the power of first-person narratives. Like, I instantly started thinking about Joyce Carol Oates' book, Zombie, which is a first-person perspective, and the character is based loosely on Jeffrey Dahmer.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a very dark and troubled individual, and I think that's maybe the thing that's so, you know, narcotic about text like that, is that it puts you in the mindset of this individual that is seemingly far removed from who you are.
Mm-hmm.
But then ultimately you have to ask yourself, how far removed, if I'm able to embody that person when I read this?
That was in the book swap, right? For our yearly holiday gathering.
Yeah. Lauren, the new co-host on Tech Stuff, got that one, so.
So right now she is her nightmares.
She's having nightmares, and shivering in a corner.
Right,
somewhere.
Jeffrey Dahmer. I'm going to throw some subliminal things out today about Jeffrey Dahmer and just see how she reacts.
Wow. So like I said earlier, it makes me think about avatars, not only in the online avatar sense, but in the old idea of the avatar, which, you know, is steeped in Hinduism, comes from the Sanskrit word avatara, which means descent. And the idea here is that you have a god, and that god is just immaterial and just completely separate from the physical world. And then to descend to the physical world, the god has to take on a form that can be understood by the physical world and that can interact with the physical world. For instance, Vishnu has 10 different avatars, and they range from, there's a fish, there's a tortoise, there's a boar, there's a dwarf, and then there's Krishna, and then there's Buddha, and then there's a 10th avatar that's the form of a white horse with wings, and it's a destroyer that'll come at the end of the world. So 10, I really like this metaphor for ourselves and the various selves we present. You know, think of your ultimate inner thoughts and everything that's going on inside you. You're kind of like this Vishnu, this formless thing. And then to interact with the physical world, to descend to the physical world, you have to take on these various forms. And they mean different things, and they have different applications in different environments.
Right. So that the type of self that we roll out really sort of depends on which avatar we need at the moment. You know what one of my avatars is?
What's that?
A duck.
A duck?
Mm-hmm.
So Julie takes on the form of the duck.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you use that avatar?
Well, it doesn't really speak, so it's,
oh.
I don't know. All right. Shall we bring over the robot?
Yeah, let's call the robot over here, and we'll do a couple of quick listener mails. All right. Well, we've heard a lot of great comments on our episodes on mazes and labyrinths. And we heard from Andrew. Andrew writes in and says, "Hi, guys. Love the podcast and especially love the episodes dealing with mazes and labyrinths. I think it is noteworthy that modern psychology has been applied to the construction of malls and shopping spaces that specifically create maze or labyrinth-like environments. Have either of you ever been to IKEA?" Of course we have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because we live in the same city as one, so everyone has to go. It's the law.
It's mandatory.
Yeah. The place is a labyrinth. No two ways about it. You walk in and you follow a path of consumption and leave next to the entrance. This psychological tool of peace and religious expansion is being used to proliferate consumer culture. And then he goes on to say, you know, it's rather different inside of a mall environment where it's like a maze. There are all these, like, how do I get out of here? How do I get to the store I want to go to? How do I escape the horrors of the food court? All these questions come up. Whereas, indeed, IKEA is so well laid out and so versed in design that there's a path you flow. It's at least for the first hour, it's a calming experience. And the book that we discuss in Maps and Labyrinths also makes that point in regard to hospitals and similar environments. One of the problems there, of course, is that you end up with a maze-like hospital because in many cases you build part of a hospital and then you build another wing onto it and there's another wing here. So you have all these layers coming together to form this thing where there's no cohesive design in place.
Which heightens your anxiety, particularly if you're at the hospital to visit someone or you yourself are checking in. So not necessarily the sort of design that you want. The book is called Healing Spaces,
yes,
right?
Yes, Healing Spaces.
And we were talking about government buildings just yesterday and how it has like this, you know, Kafka-esque bureaucratic layering of maze-like ways to get to where you need to go, and almost seems intentional. Like, we're going to make you go down this mile-long hallway, and then we're going to give you directions that are, 20 different directions on top of that.
All right. Well, here are a couple more. This one is from Jill. Jill writes in and says, "Hello. Thanks for the fantastic podcast. Labyrinths have become close to my heart over the past few years after my husband and I eloped to San Francisco. We had a marriage blessing at Grace Cathedral where I saw my first labyrinth. He walked it and it was beautiful to see every step really count. I was not comfortable to have a prayerful or meditative practice in the open, but I did find this box and book picture below," and she included some excellent photographs there, "of labyrinths at Christmas this year for my own practice. The tracing and breath are a good connection for me. I completely agree with what you said about the mazes. They are frustrating, and I don't know why they were included in this pack." She's referring to the pack of mazes and labyrinths she had. "Meditative maze did prove to be an oxymoron." Yeah, because like we discussed, there's nothing meditative about being lost in a maze. "Thanks again for all you do. It is appreciated down here in Orlando." And then we also heard from Kelly. Kelly wrote in and said, "Hello, I just finished listening to the Labyrinths episode and wanted to thank you for all the interesting facts. I am actually getting married in a labyrinth this August. My husband and I were legally married last March, but postponed our larger ceremony and reception as I was 9 months pregnant and couldn't see my feet. Now that our beautiful baby boy is here, we are renewing our vows and having an actual ceremony and reception. Our ceremony is being held here in the center of a labyrinth, which is set in the woods here in Illinois, where we live. We like the idea of the ceremony being a meditative experience. I plan to have a sign near the entrance offering a brief explanation and history of labyrinths and inviting people to sneak away from the reception to try it for themselves. I will definitely use some of the facts you covered in the show. Thanks again for a great episode, and if you read this on the show, I just want to say thanks to my husband Chad and my sons Caden and Silas for being the three most wonderful guys on the planet. Kelly."
Aw.
Yeah, that's sweet.
I think it's very cool to have a ceremony in a labyrinth.
It is, yeah. And, interesting to see, to hear from two different listeners who have employed labyrinths in their ceremony. All right. Well, if you have something you would like to share with us, be it about mazes and labyrinths or be it about the shadow self, actors. I know we have some actors out there. Let us know how that works in your mind. What's it like to take on a character? Do you use the method to any degree? If we have anyone who has done any kind of undercover work, be it like official, hard and gritty undercover work or something a little more mundane, some sort of like even public performance kind of thing where you're having to put on a character to deceive people. But seriously, if you've engaged in anything like that, we'd love to hear some more insight on how that feels and how you feel yourself embodied in the character that you're being or how you feel that character affecting you. So we'd love to hear from you about any of that. You can find us on Tumblr and you can find us on Facebook. We are Stuff to Blow Your Mind on both of those.
And you can also drop us a line at blowthemind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.